Hi.
Hi.
Didn't recognize you.
Did you have a nice trip?
Yeah, beautiful. How about you?
My new car.
Brand new?
Yeah. We traded. You now bought a brand new Buick.
Whee!
And they gave us their car and we gave them the value. And boy, they gave it to us. You filled up the truck with oil and a new air filter, I guess it is, that round thing. And he bought new tires for it. And I don't know what else he's got in the back, in the trunk. We went down, they got Buick Friday, and then after Christmas, after they'd given all the presents and everything, they gave us the keys to that car to take off. Can you imagine?
And that's an improvement.
Yeah, we got the best. See, that one, well, it's got all sorts of things. It's got power steering and, you know, brakes and air conditioning and radio. And besides that, it's not as old as our car.
Yes, I didn't realize your car had as much, was it older than?
Yeah, it's 10 years old.
I liked your car.
I did too. Jim said, gee, now I'll get to put the last 5,000 miles on until we reach the 100,000. But that Valiant's still good. Right now I need the paint job and I need some work on some spots that have started to rust. I need paint, I need new brake shoes. That's about all.
Yeah. But it was the sort of things you could do.
Oh, yeah. In fact, Jim's got the stuff. They're going to do it next weekend.
Oh. Next weekend? Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. New Year.
Because you took off a week. And of course, he has New Year's off. But. So they're going to work on that car next week. He couldn't do it this week. He wasn't supposed to be outside very much. So you know what happened? All day Saturday, just about. I swear, you and Nell are just as bad as Jim and I when it comes to buying stuff. I mean, just like that, we'll buy something. Like that motorcycle. They bought 3 French bicycles. You know, the 10-speed racers. 3 of them. From Jordan Marsh at $89 a piece. And he bought the car. Well, he picked it out Thursday night and bought it Friday. And they paid cash for it. You know, they didn't buy it on time. And they bought us, for Christmas, a stereo tape player set. It's got the record player, it's got AM, FM radio, it's got, you know, the 8-track tapes, the speakers and headphones. And, you know, those are just a big present. Not to mention all the little things they give people. But they bought 3 bicycles, you know, all 3 in one. And
is it, I'll open the door.
No.
You can't breathe?
No.
See, I haven't been moving this morning, so I'm not hot. Now, don't be uncomfortable.
I'm not uncomfortable.
Well, gee whiz, they have a Christmas tree and a stack of presents up.
Oh, yeah. View goes out, and he cuts his own tree, which this is funny. He took Faye with him this year. They go out behind this cottage that they rent to people. And it's private land, and you're not supposed to be out there, much less cutting down their tree. View goes out there. Usually Jim goes along, but we weren't home in time this year. So he went out there, and Faye said he had her run around circles. He's trying to pick out a tree and cut it down and get out there.
Before anybody
got caught. So they had a... And I've seen him when he gets in a hurry. It's real funny. Faye wants to take her time, you know, and pick out a good
tree. Right,
yeah. You know, it's got to be full and round. Didn't want to get caught. So they had the tree, and Faye decorated it. And they had, you know, all the presents on it. They had ours in a big box, you know, it was a huge present. You know, it comes out in the floor about halfway into the living room.
Oh, really?
And they had the bicycle. Oh, And Dale bought me a new chair. It's one of those reclining things. We had one, but the springs were shot. And the upholstery was bad. So she bought it for him. She and Faye picked it out. And they hid it back in the very back of the garage. And she said it took them all day to get it back there because it was in the it was in the box in the shape of a chair. Took them all day to get it back there, and they figured you will never see it because there's so much junk in that garage. It's just covered, you know. You can't make. They have two little aisles that you can go through. Well, they got the chair back there, and Nell thought, well, I'll get Jim. And Christmas Eve, after Bew's gone to bed, we'll take the chair out and put it in the living room, so it'll be a real surprise. He didn't know about it. So then he decides to buy the car. That meant that meant they had to clean everything out of the garage.
Oh.
And because, you know, he keeps his car outside all the time. Never worries about it, but with a new car, of course, he wants to keep it under cover.
Oh, yeah.
They got back there and they cleaned everything out of the garage. Of course, that's the first thing you saw was that big old chair sitting back in the corner. And the bicycles. You know how they're probably engineering miracles. Because they have the handlebars that come down like that. And you bend way over to keep your balance over, and you have the brakes just in the right place. And they have the little light seats. Well, Bew bought himself a new set of handlebars, kind of come out like that. And he bought new seats for everybody. And he bought himself, he bought headlights and rear view mirrors. Scotty sent him a horn. And somebody else sent him a speedometer. So Saturday, after they got the bikes, we spent the rest of the morning rearranging them. They all come wrapped with that kind of plastic tape. Well, we got on Bew's first, and we unwrapped all of that. Hmm. Put in his new handlebar and figured out where the rear view mirror was going to go, and then had to rewrap the tape and put on the hand grips. Well, we finally got Bew's arranged, you know, with the new seat and all. It doesn't look like the same bicycle. And we got Nell's, and she was having trouble bending over so far because it's been so long since she's ridden a bicycle. So we got hers, and all we did was unwrap them and put the rear view mirror on and the light and turn the wheel, the steering wheel, the handlebars up, just reversed them. And then put the brakes on top so she can reach out and do like that. The only bike that comes close to looking like it was originally was Faye's, and she kept her handlebars the same way but changed the seat. Because now they have these real thick black cushions. And off through it, you know, we rode those Saturday and Sunday.
Oh, really?
Well, they must be fun to ride. I've not ridden one of those.
Yeah, they are fun. It took us a while. Of course, Jim was having a ball. And he's the only one besides Bew who can get on Bew's bike. Because he got a 27-inch thing. And I can hardly touch the ground on Nails. Sitting there on one side. And they're all boys' bikes, you know, with the bar across the middle. Because they don't make them with the girl stuff. So it took them a while. Jim was the first one to try changing gears. We had to rush down to Ward's Friday night to find out how to work the thing. They thought they'd have an instruction manual with the bike. And all it showed was how to put it together. It didn't say how to work it. With 10 gears on the thing, you kind of wonder. I couldn't believe it. Three bikes, $89 a piece.
Well,
$4,300 car. And I got to thinking about Bew. They got these bikes to ride up in Georgia. They figure they have plenty of side roads and it's hilly, you know, so that
change gear.
Yeah. You know. And I could just see Bew with his gray Stetson, his cowboy boots, his jeans, and that heavy jean jacket, you know, lined with wool, and his buckle and string tie on a French racing bike.
In Georgia Hills.
Yeah, in the Georgia Hills.
But Georgia's still in their mind.
Oh, yeah. Nell told me that some man knows some people in the forestry department, and they're going to try to get Jim a job up somewhere up North Florida, and we're going to talk to somebody about it, you know, and they thought they could probably get it for him if he would apply enough. You never told Jim about it. And Nell said his reason was he didn't want Jim to feel obligated to this man. His name was Gates. She said what it was, he didn't want Jim getting a job in Florida. Because he thought Jim might want to settle down there and not come up to Georgia with him. So they didn't tell Jim about that.
Now, how did that work out?
Well, this man Gates knows some people in the forestry department in Florida. And he's going to see if he could talk to somebody about getting Jim a job up in North Florida. No, I guess not North Florida. What do you say? Around Palatka, I guess it was. Somewhere around here. And they told Bew about it. And Bew was supposed to talk to Jim and see if he wanted to apply for this job.
Oh,
Bew never mentioned it.
Never heard of
it. Nell said he didn't want Jim to feel obligated to Gates.
Yeah.
And she said the reason was he didn't want Jim settling down in Florida.
His job's in Georgia.
Yeah. Once you need to go to school in Georgia, find a job there. And you know what their idea is? They've got that 18 acres. Well, there's two hills. The thing they want more than anything else in the world is for Jim and I to build ourselves a house on the other hill. And just live there.
Yeah.
And what to do for a living?
Well, he can get a job somewhere around here.
Oh, yeah.
In Blue Ridge Parkway or just someplace where we could be there quite a bit.
Now, that's something, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would fix you for life, wouldn't it? You wouldn't have to worry anymore. That's right.
But I know that's just as real and beautiful. He wouldn't even more think about Jim going anyplace else than Georgia.
I saw the children coming in. Living around. I see that's a normal thing. But educated people who got out of that, see, they're prepared for that children to marry and go off to the far corners. And just scatter. All they do is see on vacation. But now that's something to think about, you see.
Yeah.
And you can live in your family all your days.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you can do that, now if you can do that, it's worth a try, isn't it?
It seems like it's worth it.
Yes,
sir. Well, that's fun.
But Nell said she's talking about that, about wanting us to come up there, and then she started laughing. She said, "You know, you never think about you wanting to be close to your family." But I think that's probably as much as anything. I don't know, maybe not, but you see, Betty will be there in Georgia. You see, nothing more natural in the world than for Jim to be there too. I think that's why they gave us a car, so we'll feel obligated to them.
Well, they're not scheming, they're not.
I know, no.
Well, they are too. He wouldn't tell Jim about the job.
That's right.
That's true.
He probably thought Jim was an industry owner.
Now, Bew has never got outside the family.
No, he's, I don't think so, because even when he came down to Coco, he, you know, for the first time, he talked about those early days, or maybe not really the first time I listened to him, and, talking about some of the people in Coco, and you know, the ones that were sort of just well known, that drove the fire engines. He worked on the volunteer fire department. He talked. But even then, when he first came down here, he worked for his brother. And then after he got married, Jim says he used to have a lot of friends. And he still does in a way. He just doesn't have anything to do with them much. And especially since Jim got old enough to start doing things with him. And in their vacations and all, it was always, they had the little camper, and that's what they did for their vacations. We'd go to these different springs. And they'd meet people there and make friends, but it was still, you know, just, you know, just camping out for a week. And since I've known them, I've never known them to invite people over to their house for a party or bridge or anything like that. And his one love, I think, in the way of cards is poker. And he plays over at the base all the time. And he used to play a lot at night. But he loves to play poker. He just play for hours and hours. And he used to do that. But I guess just over the years, he just gradually just, you know,
well, see, it's not quite normal, but Suzanne sees, because when she and Jim go down there, they take over.
Yeah, it's family there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's kind of, well, you just, you know, they don't have steak for breakfast every morning.
No, but when you all go, you see, they just turn it over to you. And Faye and maybe mother, or whoever, you know, just close in. But have you been there, except, well, you've been there a lot of weekends.
Yeah.
When nothing was going on.
Yeah.
But when you got there, still.
Still, Jim and you would think up something to do with the car, usually. Like Jim won't take books home to study on the weekend. For him, it's you're supposed to visit.
Yeah, and get something done.
And of course, Faye loves to go shopping. Anytime she can talk him by into it, she wants to go to the field. And the new shopping cart that they have. And now we'll go along with it sometimes, but sometimes she doesn't want to. She wants to stay home. She doesn't want Jim and I going off shopping. You know? And Jim would never consider going to a movie while we were there, or going out for the evening. I think we've done it once, on our birthday, I think we did. But he wouldn't, you know, consider going out for the evening.
Yeah, it's family. You went out your home to do things with the family.
Well, that's nice, you know, in a way.
That's the way we always do.
Anyway. Yeah. Movie actually be let down anyhow.
Well, when my brother and sister come home, when they go down to Houston anyway, well, that's, they like going out. In fact, they go out a lot anyway, but I just don't stay home myself too. But I don't know what it is. I've always enjoyed being around either my family or Jim. And my sister doesn't like it. She can't listen to him. You know, it's just boring to her. I've always been.
Even when you were her age.
Yeah. Tell Faye about the rest.
The what?
The
rest. Mom. Oh, gosh. Well, I can tell you the latest thing. John, the owner. He he's high, let's see, he's got six fellows Jim's age working for him. Well, he's redoing his restaurant. He did hire somebody to come in and put in a carpet. All the rest of the renovations, his employees are doing. He wants the top painted. They painted the whole front and sides and under the eaves and all. Well, up on top of the lawns, there's a slanted thing like that. I guess it's about 6 feet, and then it straightens off. He wants that painted. He wouldn't hire anybody to do it, and he's getting these fellas to do it, and he won't rent a scaffold. They have to do it from a ladder. The whole, you know, all the way around it, from a ladder. Jim says, have you ever stood on a ladder for more than about 10 minutes? I started thinking about it, it just about killed the calves of your legs. He says, yeah, and it kills the balls of your feet. But he won't rent a scaffold. And Thursday, when they're all cleaning up, that's another thing. He won't hire anybody with one of these professional cleaning services for his restaurant. So that restaurant gets cleaned once a year, just about. And what he means by cleaning is when you just really take everything out and go into all the cracks and holes. They clean it every night, the floor and the tops. And all. But Jim said you'd get in there and you'd find grease about an inch and a half thick. And they just have to get knives and scrape it out. He said behind the cooler that they keep, where they keep the glasses and cheese and meat and stuff, they find, you know, old pieces of meat and cheese and stuff behind that, and dried beer. He said, that makes you sick. But he won't hire a cleaner to do that. But he had all these fellas in, and he had $250 to throw a Christmas party. And he gave us a party, and he told the fellas that were going to have to come in and clean that he'd give them lunch. They'd have all they wanted to eat all day, and all the beer they could drink, and the Pirate's Sloth and the Pirate's Cove. Well, they got all the grills and everything cleaned so they couldn't cook on them. So they had all the beer they could drink and all the coleslaw, but he wouldn't give them lunch. So Jim said, well, how about giving us lunch at Fat Boy? He says, no, y'all can do what you want. I'm not going to pay for that. It took them about an hour before they could talk him into giving them $10 for five boys to go have lunch at Fat Boy. And here he had $250 to spend. And I don't think he spent that much the night before. But Jim comes home and he's got all these stories about Johnny. He tells everybody in the restaurant, all the salesmen who come in, you know, sell beer or milk or bread, the latest episode on the relationship between him and his wife, and they're things you wouldn't even tell your own family. And he'll even tell men who come in to drink beer and just sit there a long time. He'll go and talk to them because he knows, you know, winter period is, you know, why they're getting divorced, and just all sorts of things. It's just terrible. And he came in Wednesday for the party, and he was sitting there, and he said he just about talked his wife into coming, but he says she backed out. She says, I don't think those people down at Lum's like me. Jim said, I kind of suspect she knows what he talks about when he's down there. Because every employee in that place knows just, you know, just the details of her private life.
And then he was going to bring her.
Yeah, he was going to bring her. She must have a suspicion. You know, she can just imagine sitting there at dinner with everybody who knows
about your personal life.
But I told Jim, I said, I think about 90% of the conversation down there has to do with sex. And a lot of it does. Or the jokes and things. I guess because, I don't know. Anyway. They're pretty free. All the girls, except one. No, two. One is married. The rest are living with her boyfriend. And one girl and her roommate are sharing an apartment with three boys. And so it's a pretty, kind of a free and easy sort of thing down there. And one girl has a baby. And Gail and Jim were talking one day, and said something about, they were talking about marriage and why it was better than just living with somebody. And Jim said, well, if there's a child, you know who the father is. And this other girl has the baby coming and says, well, I didn't know who the father was, and it didn't bother me. Jim comes home with all this, you know, I just kind of sit there and I go, well, okay. But she got fired Thursday when that came. She came in to pick up her paycheck. And she started, her boyfriend came with her, and they were just kind of standing around watching. And first of all, she wanted John to cash her paycheck, and he wouldn't do it. He didn't have enough cash. And she kept just kind of wheedling and asking him to do it, and he kept telling her no. So finally she quit, and she went over, and she was talked to one of the boys named Peter, and asked for, just got a paper cup and just wanted a little bit of beer. Well, he gave it to her, and because they were all drinking it. And so a little while later, she came back and got some more. And then after a while, three or four trips like that, she came back and got a schooner of beer, one of these great big spoons. And she sat there drinking, and John saw her. And he says, you got to pay for that, you know. She said, well, why do I have to pay for it? They're drinking it free. And he said, well, they're working, and you're not. She said, well, I don't have 40 cents. Because all she had was her paycheck, which she wouldn't cash. Her boyfriend didn't have any money, and she didn't have any money. He wouldn't let her out of the store till she paid. And she said, well, I don't have it. And he says, well, you're not. He took her paycheck back. He says, when you bring me the 40 cents, you can have your paycheck. Well, she got mad about that. Well, he was mad, too. So he started talking pretty rough. And finally, one of the boys kind of got her boyfriend off to the side and gave him 40 cents because they didn't want to do it right in front of John because they thought, well, then he'd get mad at me. So the boy, he got the 40 cents and he paid John, and John gave her a paycheck and said, you're fired. That was the end of her.
Well, Suzanne and Jim talks about this.
Oh, yeah. With great relish. Well, when they were at Fat Boys, they met a waitress who had worked for John before in another town. And she had all sorts of stories. About every 5 minutes, every time she'd get a break, you know, waiting on other customers, she'd come back to their table and tell them something else that had happened. And the trouble with Jim is you don't get all the episodes for about a week. You know, he keeps thinking of them. But what John did one time, some man came in there and started talking real loud and carrying on. He's pretty far along. And John told him to be quiet. He's disturbing other customers. And the guy gave him some back talk. John said, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to knock your block off. And the man got mad then and started really cussing John out. And John started cussing him out. And after a while, he grabbed the guy. Grabbed him by the arms and then just literally threw him out of the restaurant. Just dragged him over the door and got one of the other guys to hold it open and just kicked him out. He does that kind of stuff all the time.
He's a pretty big fella?
Well, he's not real big. He's not as tall as Jim. But I guess he's maybe about 6 foot tall. And not really heavy set, but, you know, sturdy. Mm-hmm. But he's, he talks rough. Anytime somebody, a customer will go up and start fooling with the TV, which is just really bad. John says, I'm going to tear your arm off if you touch that TV again. You know, just language like that. And what really makes me mad is when somebody will go in the bathroom and tear the sink off the wall or something like that. If he can find out who did it, he'll either throw them out himself or he'll call the police. He calls the police first. And anytime any trouble starts, he calls the police first. And then he takes things into his own hands. And he'll come to bat for any of the waitresses, too. If they feel like the customer's insulted them or been ugly to them, they'll tell John.
Oh.
And John will throw the customer out. So if the customer isn't right and lumps, you behave yourself once you're in there. Ellen did that one day. She's back there and it's two men and their girlfriends. And they started giving her a lot of trouble. And she came up to John. She says, I'm not going to wait on them. John says, how? And she says, well, they're being pretty ugly back there. And she repeated what they said. Jim didn't say what it was. But John went back there and said, I'm sorry, but there's no waitresses. They're going to wait on you. Well, there's all these other people sitting around, too, listening to all this. And they got mad, and the woman started talking. She said, well, he's sorry. He didn't mean it. She must have just had a bad day and just misunderstood what he said. And John says, she doesn't usually misunderstand what people say. He made them leave. He didn't make them leave. He just let them sit there, and nobody would wait on them. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of got to be a, waiting game. And after a while, they got up and left. Everybody in the back room started yelling, Ray, boo, as these people walked out the door.
All that goes on at lunch.
Yeah. And Gail's a favorite waitress. I told Guy the other day, she makes about twice as much in tips as any of the other girls. Not that she's real pretty. She's kind of cute, and she's real vivacious and lively, and she flirts with the customers, and a lot of them are boys and men come in for the beer. And she's a worker, as Jim calls it. She's always doing something. She won't stand around and just sit there and talk like the other girls. She'll find something to do, usually. And John likes her, and everybody else does, because she's always got something to say or some joke to make. And she's pretty outspoken too. I forgot what it was, but John was in his office. They're a little careful around him, what they say. But he was in her office, and she dropped a glass, one of the great big glasses, and that's a fairly common occurrence. But she dropped. She said, oh, "Bullshit." she said it real loud. And John heard her, of course, and he says, God damn it, Gail, can't you use better language in here?
I just wonder how they play it all together.
Well, John, he doesn't hesitate to fire somebody. If a fellow, you're supposed to give 2 weeks' notice if you're looking for a job. Or you want to quit. Well, by experience, they've learned that you don't do that if you plan to keep working those 2 weeks. You give him about a week's notice, and that way he'll fire you the day that you plan to quit. And you can go ahead and get your job. But if you give him the notice, usually he'll fire you pretty quick. He'll find some reason to. One girl lasted one day. She came in and got the job. One afternoon, she came back the next day, and Jim said he looked at her and he couldn't see how on earth she ever got it. He said she had one of these real, real rough looking faces, like she'd worked in a truck stop. But she came in her skirt, and she'll wear a white blouse and black skirt. Her skirt was kind of had streaks in it. It was old, I suspect, and it was just kind of ratty looking. And her white blouse is kind of yellowish and dirty around the collar. And John got Jim. He said, Jim, could you kind of suggest that when she gets paid, that maybe she get herself some better clothes to work? He gave Jim that job. So Jim had to somehow tell her that she had to get herself some new clothes or she wouldn't be able to work there. Well, the first day, her only day, she dropped a tray of tartar sauce, and they come in little cups, so she dropped that on the floor. And what was bad, she dropped it in the wooden part. They have a wooden runway with rails and all. And she dropped it in there, so it all went down underneath the wood on the floor. And she broke a tray of glasses, about six glasses. And I don't know what else she did. But anyway, she only lasted one day. And her boyfriend came in the next day and wouldn't know how to come. Jim said he looked rougher than she did. But John went out and told him. Says, I forgot what happened then, but they had a pretty fierce argument there by the cash register about why she got fired. John finally ended up and says, if you don't get the hell out of here, I'm going to call the cops. So they left. That's his, you know, if you don't get out of here, I'm going to call the cops, and he'll do it. He'll even do it if somebody comes in underage and tries to drink. If they're not 21.
Oh.
He'll call the police for that, too. Because if he gets caught serving them, then he loses his license.
Now, all up and down the highway, this sort of thing happens, I know. Isn't that something? I never thought about that.
I don't know whether it's worse than a college town or what.
I never thought about that.
Lum's looks so quiet.
Yeah.
You know, nice in there. And I think the main attraction at Lum in the first place is it's got good beer, and they serve it in those real cold glasses, and they give a lot of it. You get a big glass. And also they have a TV, which... on weekends and at night particularly, is, you know, everybody comes in and they get some beer or a hot dog or something and watch the TV. But you think of some of the stuff that goes on, and I guess sometimes the customers get drunk and they do cause trouble, and John just doesn't let it get started. he just throw them out if he doesn't like them.
Now, he's the one that the people ate and held.
Oh, yeah. That's Jim's favorite. A group of a motorcycle gang came in, and it was a group, this is before Jim started working there, but it was a group that nailed some girl to a tree down in Miami. I forgot which. Anyway, they came in at night, and they started threatening the night manager. Probably Jim's day, and said they're going to tear up the place, and they pulled out their razor blades. Some of them had knives, some had razor blades. Well, about that time, John came in the door, and he saw, you know, he could see these guys with their knives out. So he went right back out in his car and got his 38, and he came in. He didn't even stop to call the police. He came in, and he started talking to them and asked them what was the matter, and they said they're going to wreck his place. He talked him long enough, Jim said, to find out which one was sort of the boss. And then he pulled his 38 and cocked it, pointed it at his hip. He says, you're not going to tear this place up. You're going to sit down and eat. You're going to eat all of it. And then you're going to pay, and then you're going to leave. And he sat there and held the gun on the stove till they'd finished eating. And they ate it, too. And he kept it on till he paid. And then when they left and they went down, I think they tore up Jerry's that night. But he told the boy, he says, you guys may kill me, but you're going to be the first one dead. It's the one he had the pistol pointed at.
I'd sort of like to know Johnny.
I don't know, Faye.
Well, I mean,
you've seen him.
I've seen him. The first time he ever talked to me was before the party was going to start. And he gets along pretty well with most people, I guess. He's real friendly, in a way. And I'm sitting at the bar, and I don't come in too much, because in the first place, he's one of the rules is you're not supposed to sit and talk to your wife or girlfriend or boyfriend. So The only time I come in is about closing time, and it's slow anyway, and Jim won't get in trouble for talking to me. Well, I don't think he will anymore, because John likes him pretty well. So I come in fairly often. I came in that day, I guess it was Saturday, and I was having a Coke and just a hamburger. And John came over and said, Jim said he's going to get you drunk Wednesday night for the party. I said, well, he said he's going to have to be the first one under the table. And he started talking to me, just talked about how good Arch was. And he said, what are you going to eat? And I said, well, probably lobster. He says, no, you don't want lobster. He says, you can get lobster anytime. I said, I can't get lobster anytime. He says, you got to have the porterhouse. And he started describing this fantastic steak. And talks real fast, and he's kind of hard to understand sometimes. And he brushes his mustache all the time. Just like that with his thumb. And he sits there and talk, and then he'd go off and he'd come back. Well, about that time, I started deciding, well, maybe I didn't want to go to this party so much because he's friendly, but he's obnoxious. That's the only word for it, I guess. Or it strikes me that way. And Jim, too. And you don't want to be, you know, ugly to him because he's just trying to be friendly, but you don't want anything to do with him either. So he, after that, now when I come in, you know, he's real friendly and he talks a lot. I said, Jim, what am I going to do if he asks me to dance? His idea was to go to Arts and then hit all the other night spots in town, such as they are. Dubs, I guess, and Trader Tom's, and those places Cookie goes through every once in a while, and the girls corner him in the lounge. But I just worry one of these days, he already has. He's already talked to me about his wife a couple of times, just sort of in passing. But as soon as he got his divorce, he started doing things like deciding how much money he was going to give her. He wouldn't give her what she wanted. And I know he'd think of these elaborate reasons why he couldn't give her that much money. And he went out and he bought himself a brand new trailer, and you know, furnished and all. And he got himself one of these real fantastic stereo outfits, you know, the lighted speakers, every attachment you could possibly want. And Jim said he came in, you know, the Saturday after the divorce, dressed in a red blazer and a white turtleneck and blue pants. Just really going to town. And he kept asking, he asked every waitress in Lums to go with him to the Georgia Florida game. And none of them would go because they don't like him. Let's just go to a football game and, you know, who knows what else after. So they all told him they had boyfriends or dates or something like that. He's going to let him off work. I didn't have that excuse for not going. They all just lived in dread about who he's going to ask next. And for his birthday, 2 weeks before his birthday, he called Jim in, and he called Gail and Ellen, and everybody was there, and told him his birthday was going to be on a certain day. So Jim said they kind of had a discussion. They didn't know quite what to do. I mean, when your boss comes and tells you when his birthday is, you kind of get the idea you expect something. So they contributed $2 apiece. Just three of them would do it. Jim and Gail and one other girl.
What can you get for $6?
What can you get for $6? Gail was going to make a cake, and she said, "Happy birthday, John." She spelled birthday. It's the first cake she'd made in a long time. B-I-R-D-A-Y, not the H. Jim had to buy the present. Well, they didn't even ask the night crew to contribute, because they knew the night crew wouldn't. The night crew hates Jim. And they didn't ask anybody else, because nobody else would give them money. Three of them. So they bought him a Playboy. Jim and I picked it out. We got him a Playboy puzzle, the kind that comes in the coffee can as a Playmate of the Month. And got him a little plaque that says, "In God we trust, all others pay cash." He hung that over his cash register. Because he doesn't take checks. You pay in cash or you leave your driver's license. But he was real pleased with his birthday party. And they had a cake for him, two presents.
Everybody and all the staff came?
Yeah, all the staff. I think there were four there. Yeah. One was a new girl, so they didn't expect her to pay anyone. After talking to Uncle DeLoss this week, and I said, "Jim, are you sure you wouldn't like just to pick oranges?"
Suzanne, you know, everything I do turns out different. When I started on the taping, the thing I wanted most of all I wanted was just to get those horses down. And I had that just hanging over me all the time. You see, that summer of 68, I'd go there and talk, and I couldn't tape. and it just hurt me, so I just quit going. Well, it's a scary thing. Now, I've got some beautiful tapes. I thought that'd be the end of it. Just stick them on the library shelf and open them up in 50 years from now. Everybody was gone. I wouldn't have anything to do it. You see, nobody can listen to the tapes. So I'm more important than the tapes are. Now, if you can be any more wrong than that, I don't know how you'd be. And I used to think before Barbara came around, you see, you had to be 30 at any rate before you observant enough to talk, and here you are, you're not sitting, you're just sitting here just chattering away. And if anybody had told me that Jim would hold down a 6-day-a-week job at a dump like this, I'll say, you just never know. He can't get in there and do the work. He doesn't mind the work.
No, he doesn't mind the work.
But it's all...
it's the people. Because he's already finding out you have to... kind of have to juggle people, because he's got him, he's got his boss. Who is his boss?
Well, how did he manage it to him?
Well,
I mean,
the same way his father manages
it.
He just.
Well, his father never had to put up with anything like that.
Oh, of course. Anybody who's got a boss has got to put up with a lot of stuff. I mean, you know, if you're lucky. And work under a good man, well, then you're okay. But you haven't been that lucky all the time.
All your bosses won't be there.
No, he's got one. What he has now, all Britain, he's okay. But he's the sort of man that, you know, you may tell him 3 or 4 months ahead of time that you want your vacation at a certain time. Well, he doesn't think anything in the world of saying okay, that's fine. And then a week before, change it and decide he wants to go then. And you can't go at the same time all Brent does, so he's stuck. And when Bew went up to Green Cove Springs, where Jim was born, he only worked a year there because he couldn't stand the boss. He just finally, he just packed up and came back to Cocoa because he just couldn't make it without me. But most of the time, Jim does okay because... he just, same thing, well, sometimes with his teachers, but, he just kind of learned to be tactful. But, you know, if he can, I don't know what you'd call it, a sense of humor or a light touch, but if he can keep that up, then he's okay. It's when he gets tired or something like that, then he can. And then it gets to him and he comes home with that long face and doesn't talk all evening.
Yeah.
But if he can laugh about it when he gets home, when he's reporting about it, I guess, then it's different. But you know, just that reaction to people kind of fades away and you can look at it and, you know, it starts to be kind of funny. They're not quite so bothersome.
Do you think he sees that? I mean, he maybe doesn't see it, but...
I think he knows it. He wouldn't... I expect he could see it if he... I mean, he could say it if he wanted to, but I think he knows it. I think Bew knows it. I think a lot of people do.
If they talk about it?
Yeah, then when they talk about it, it's... You know, it's not as bad.
Yeah, but
well, here Jim was. He was. I mean, I guess Monday he was really feeling, he was sick, you know, at 104, you don't feel so good.
When?
You know, on Monday.
Oh,
even if he
as
wasn't.
As late as Monday he had that fever?
Monday is when he had it. You know, he started getting sick Sunday.
Oh.
See, he came down Sunday. Sunday night he had a fever, and Monday's when he was real bad, and all day Tuesday.
It just came fast when it...
Yeah. And, but as soon as it was over, he could, you know, talk about it. He wanted to talk about it. He wanted to tell somebody how bad he felt, you know. But when he did it, then he didn't feel so bad about it anymore. It got funny.
You going to type?
Yeah.
I'm going to go out and put a little fence across that pasture and let the cows in, part of it, that upper part. That's supposed to have been come on out, you see. But what happened, I think, is the weather was so good, the old grass kept growing, and then that rye grass couldn't grow. And then I noticed up there where the muda was, there's no rye grass at all. You see, that's been in there. I put that in early.
Yeah, I remember.
Way back. And it was so thick, that muda so thick, you see. I should have cut that up. But I didn't.
There wasn't enough coal to kill back the other grass.
That's right. No, that's right. And even that old Bermuda kept going. Why'd y'all visit? Turn this thing off and get going. Leslie was here last night and he picked Faye up at the plane. And came on out here, and then we had a little supper, and he talked. And you talked about reporting. And you know, he's a scholar. And I'd watched him there for a while, and he talks pretty much like I do. He uses present tense. There's no high evidence. And there's no phrase balanced expression. But she speaks in that.
One lesson or two.
Yeah. Ever a brilliant child, he's at. He just wins the prizes and everywhere he goes. And as Faye says, he tosses it off. He never even talks about it. I'll send this off. Y'all go ahead. What you doing?
This is the Channel 1 writer on 800 or 900, and the end of the visit Suzanne this morning, the 27th of December, 71. Channel 1 right around 800 or 900, and the end of the visit with Suzanne this Monday morning, the 27th of December, 71. This morning visit, she's fresh from Cocoa, and they've got this new car. Bew's old car, he bought a new one. Gave him the old one, and it is a fine one. Channel 1 right around 800 or 900, and the end of the visit with Suzanne this morning after breakfast, or the middle of the morning, this Monday, the 27th of December, 71.